You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website RickAckerman.com. He is speaking to us today from...
From Heatstroke, Florida. Thanks for inviting me on, Jim, as always. And you always ask where I'm speaking to you from. And they've got some sort of heat advisory out today. And it says, this reminds me that the advice they give you in the weather report is drink plenty of fluids, you know, and stay, it says stay in an air conditioned room. And which reminds me of there was a Lenny Bruce routine. He was talking about a pamphlet that Florida put out about swimming in shark infested waters. And the first do on the list was, get out of the water. So anyway, yeah, I'm in my air-conditioned room right now and just kind of enjoying the day, because if I go outside, I'll get vaporized.
Now, is the war in the Middle East over? Is the Strait of Hormuz a safe place to, say, go shark swimming?
It's a safe place to take your little rubber ducky, you know, yeah, and swim around, because you'll be too small a target, really. But I don't know. I guess it's safe. I think that that's probably one thing that Trump, for all his blather, one thing he can actually do is. But you know, it's funny that throughout this whole debate, it was never clearly established who had control of the Strait of Hormuz. You know, Trump and Vance kept saying, we totally control it, and all the admiralty said the same thing. But apparently, we've got this 14-point peace plan, essentially, to open up Hormuz. So I don't know. I think it is predictable, though, although Trump's not predicting it. You got to go to CNN these days to get the real story. Crazy, isn't it? But I think it's going to be a long time before shipping settles down and the inventory that's out there afloat somehow gets to the pump.
Is the world going to go into recession because it was closed for such a long time?
Well, you know, the world's been skirting recession for the last 40 years, and especially during this last boom, and it's just been coming, you know. I mean, for all the explosive growth in the wealth effect, when we see these stocks gap up, they're not doing too much gapping up anymore, by the way. The gaps are sort of desperation leaps. But yeah, we've been, just ask any person in the broad middle class of America whether the economy's booming or not, and you'll get the true picture there.
Could the closure of the Strait be the black swan event that everybody's been worried about for the stock markets?
No, the black swan is really Trump himself and his ebbing credibility. And it's sort of a slow floating black swan, but I think that's really what's coming our way. Trump is losing more credibility each day. And I think I always qualify this by saying I voted for him twice, and I'd probably vote for him again just for what he's done domestically as far as draining the swamp. And he may even roll over Thune to get this fair elections package passed. So I think Trump's instincts with respect to the domestic scene are very much on target, and I think he's been effective there. But I'm not so sure about the economic part of his agenda and the geopolitical. So and I think probably the biggest place where Trump will lose credibility is in this promise he kept making about bringing back affordability. And even now, that's a main theme. When he talks about opening up oil shipments, the shipping lanes, he ties it very clearly to a lowering of fuel prices at the pump and elsewhere. So it's a major concern, and he's not going to tame inflation, much less reverse it. So this is going to play. It's going to be increasingly difficult for him to run on the economy when inflation is virtually asphyxiating the middle class.
Do you think inflation is going to be high going into the November midterm elections?
Yeah, it'll be higher. There's just so much inflation in the pipeline right now. And I guess, you know, there's the deflator, the counter trend is nothing to brag about because it's simply tens and tens and tens of thousands of layoffs. And we're not talking about waitress jobs. We're talking about high paying jobs in the tech sector that are being replaced by AI. And while I mention AI, let me, I think the best essay I've seen, there's no issue of importance that is more misunderstood than AI and what it can do and what it can't. And a guest columnist writing for Charles Hugh Smith's Of Two Minds has put his finger on it. I think it's the best essay that I've seen on the subject, which is, as I said, widely misunderstood. And it talks about how AI's capabilities are overrated, how essentially it's AI kind of averages the answers and intelligence that make the world go round. It flattens them all, and this theme is developed brilliantly. So I would strongly suggest everybody go to Patreon or Substack and find the essay, which is What AI Can and Can't Do.
Right. Well, when I broke my shoulder, I reverted to AI to take my notes during interviews, and it referred to the Strait of Hormuz as the Strait of Hormones. Maybe they were right about that.
Was it trying to be funny? AI doesn't make many good jokes, really.
No.
Yeah, it's not Shecky Green. It is not even Milton Berle. Anyway, yeah, I think that's another bomb that's going to implode, really, the whole huge investment in AI. We've kind of dealt with it. We've seen it happen. We've seen the stock market be spooked by the prospect that the huge malinvestment and overinvestment in AI is at some point going to collapse, and it will. It has to.
You were talking about the price of crude before we started the interview. It's now dropped down to the 80s, about where it was, I think, before the war in the Straits started. Is it going to go lower than that? And will we see that at the pump right away?
No, we won't. We'll see some of it at the pump. I buy my gas at Costco, and they're pretty sensitive to even downward movement. I'm seeing $74 on the NYMEX August crude, and I've got a target, a purely technical target. I couldn't really explain why, but I'm looking at $51 a barrel. But again, I think that's something you've got to be careful what you wish for, because if and when oil gets down to $51 a barrel, the global economy is in deep doo-doo.
We used to talk about Dr. Copper, with copper prices being the predictor of how the economy is going to do. Has crude replaced that?
Well, what crude replaced was the inventory of U.S. homes prior to the 2007-08 real estate, the great financial crash. At that time, residential real estate was hawked six ways of Sunday. And of course, after that experience, all the genius paper shufflers said, well, what are we going to hawk up to our ears this time? And the answer was the energy patch. So the energy patch matters as much in the financial sense as it does in the fuel sense, because the whole global House of Cards is really built on leveraged or super leveraged energy resources. So, you know, $51 a barrel on crude would put a lot of people in quite a fix who essentially did their lending and borrowing with crude pegged at a much higher price. So again, be careful what you wish for.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, what's going on with gold?
Well, it's getting the crap beat out of it along with silver, and I think it's got further to go. This is caused primarily by a squeeze on dollars. You know, Trump has definitely curtailed the supply of easy dollars, even to the extent that, you know, it's pushed a lot of Bitcoin holders to liquidate their store of Bitcoin. And of course, they're going to do that usually before they start liquidating gold. We talked about Gresham's Law the last time and how if you're holding all kinds, different kinds of money, the one you hold on to longest is gold. But because gold is infinitely fungible, everybody, you can always convert gold to real things. It's being sold hard, in some cases by sovereign entities like India. You know, India has always had a certain reverence for gold that translates into higher gold sales around wedding season because, they love gold so much that the women wear India's gold. So India, just to pay its fuel bills, has been liquidating large quantities of its gold inventory, but that's happening globally, really. I just take India as one instance where it's kind of extreme. So gold has been under pressure by gold holders who are desperate to raise cash.
The story for silver?
Same thing, although, you know, when you sort of slice and dice the stories, silver, there's a little bit of a bullish glimmer there because silver more and more is being used industrially and as part of, to a greater extent than before in car manufacturing and everywhere else. Silver winds up being, not that gold isn't useful, but silver is, it has, a little bit of cachet as an industrially useful metal. So, but yeah, it's bullion and it'll come down as gold will. And in fact, today silver is really getting crushed. Silver is off 6.5%. That's $4.50 per ounce. And that's more than twice as much as the loss in gold today. The August COMEX gold is off $136 now. That's a little more than 3%. So silver is really getting kicked hard today, which, well, we see that frequently.
Is copper holding up?
Well, it's jiggling and jaggling. Let me look at, I'm going to look at a kind of a long-term chart here. And copper, I'm going to say it looks kind of toppy to me, although the weekly chart, you see essentially higher lows and higher highs. The last high in copper occurred back in mid-May, and it was just marginally it's about $6.78 a pound. And that was only marginally higher than a top that was made just 4 months earlier. So silver looks like it's sort of edging out. You could argue that it's in a topping formation, although because the prior lows are still intact, for the most part, you know, you could argue it the other way. But, you know, I'm going to give you a target for the September COMEX copper, currently $6.45 a barrel. I think it could go as high as $7.53 a barrel. So I say a barrel, I mean a pound. And also, if copper were to come down right now from 640, let's call it 646 a pound, if it were to come down to $5.90 a pound, that would be a salacious buy. You know, there's a particular type of chart formation that I use to do some buying, and if copper were to sell off by $1.54 a pound or so down to $5.90, it would be a back up the truck buy. So I guess you could say I'm only, but so bearish on copper right now.
With the Strait of Hormuz being closed off for roughly 4 months and oil prices going up so high, has that made the case for more electric vehicles?
At the household level, it has, you know, especially in Europe, Sweden, other some of the places where gas, who knows, even knows what it is. I haven't been to Europe in a while, but what are they paying, like $20 a gallon? I don't know. So, yeah, when gas prices get up that high, it has definitely jolted sales of electric vehicles. I don't know how long that will last, because electric vehicles are still sort of searching for that elusive, you know, the 500-mile battery. And there's no question that that with all the technology that Musk has in play, that at some point we're going to make a breakthrough with electric car batteries. But for now, the used car market for electric cars, it's they're sold by sort of by the pound, like doorstops or something. And we've had some relief there, but I don't know that the Chinese, for instance, are cranking out more electric cars than they can sell, and it's a difficult market to assess. Speaking personally, I just like internal combustion engine cars, so I'm sticking with my Acura, and I would say the resale value has held up pretty well.
Yeah. Well, Vancouver's the Tesla capital of North America, and that's because we have the highest gasoline prices due to an 18.5 cent a liter transit tax. So just times that by four, that's how much a gallon. So, we've had gasoline prices as high as $10 a gallon.
Yeah, that's no fun, especially with all the hills there, you know. You get, I guess you need gas power even in the hybrids to get you up the hills, and then
Electric vehicles do have great torque, and besides, in Vancouver, for us, a long distance trip is Whistler, which is an hour and a half away. As long as you can go skiing, you know, you got it made here.
I used to ski in when I lived in San Francisco. I used to ski in Tahoe. And you take Route 80 if it snowed sometimes. I remember getting down to my last, 16th of a tank of gas in a snowstorm where you couldn't, if you wanted to try to get gas, you had to get in line for 2.5 hours. And, so there, I think the problem is even more acute with electric vehicles, and exacerbated by cold weather, which, I think diminishes your battery power.
When I used to work at 1130 News Radio, they had hybrid cars, and my goal was always to return to the garage with my news cruiser with more electrical charge than I left with. I would try to find the shallowest route to wherever I was going and the steepest hills to come back to charge up.
Well, you were a model citizen then. There should be more of you out on the road.
I did win an award from the Canadian Automobile Association as the most fuel-efficient driver. back in the 70s.
Okay. You got it on the mail like an Oscar, right?
No, they gave me a giant book of the road, every road in Canada. And but the thing is, I'm going, if you really want to know, yes, just remember the terrain. Is you want to try to find the shallow route going and the steep route coming back if you have electrical stuff. Bitcoin, is it going to fade out or is it going to hang around somewhere?
Well, as you know, I've never been a big Bitcoin believer. I'd say stablecoin is making some inroads because it has that conspicuous advantage of being tied to something real like treasury paper. But I still see Bitcoin as fundamentally worthless, and at some point it's gonna come home to roost. But as far as now, you know, it's just a trade. It goes up and it goes down. It's come off a high there. Let's see, what was the high on Bitcoin? It was back in. And about $130,000 per. We've come off more than 50%. The recent low just a month ago was about 59,000. So it sort of dipped below, and it doesn't help that one of the big players, Saylor, is on the ropes there with his company, which was committed to just buying Bitcoin forever, never selling, and turns out they finally sold to pay a dividend on their preferred stock. So Bitcoin is a little bit beleaguered here, and let me give you a projection just for your Bitcoin minded listeners. Let's see here, and I'll stake my life on this as always. Bitcoin, I think it's going to come down to around 44,000. Well, let's call it 45,000. And it's currently 62,551. If it rallies up to 73,000, don't get too jazzed about that because that would be a short sale, by my technical runes. But I do think it's got the ways to fall here, another $18,000 down to the $45,000 threshold.
Is the SpaceX IPO the vacuum of outer space emptying your wallet?
Well, you know, Wall Street is going to go gaga over something that's the valuation is up in the trillions, and of course it gets there, goes higher pretty quickly. It's a generator of our fraudulent wealth effect, and it's doing it like we haven't seen anything do it before in a long while. So it's big money. If you read that Charles Q. Smith essay, the one at his Of Two Minds site that I was talking about, what AI can do and what it can't do, you'll understand why the premium being awarded to all things AI is egregiously overwrought. It's never going to pay off at a level commensurate with what's being thrown at it right now. And you'll be the essay itself is so clear that there's no getting around the point of it. So SpaceX is just a huge sort of bundles up everything that Elon Musk says he will achieve, including data centers up in outer space where they won't have a cooling problem and things like that, but they will have a radiation problem and a gravity
time lag. Even if
the SpaceX valuation is kind of pegged to the idea that everything that Musk says he's going to do, he's going to do. I think he's an amazing guy, and relative to mere billionaires, he probably is worth a trillion. But But I think SpaceX also will be absorbing Tesla, which I reflects Musk's idea of synergizing everything that he owns. Everything that he's doing is sort of vertically integrated there. So I don't think it's far-fetched to think that SpaceX will eventually acquire Tesla. The paradox there is that Tesla, it almost seems to be getting beaten down or certainly not supported by buybacks, as so many other of what I call lunatic stocks are. The Magnificent Seven I refer to as the lunatic sector. But it almost looks like Musk is allowing Tesla to price out so that when SpaceX buys it, it'll get it for a bargain price.
Now, on the curiosity factor front, former U.S. Secretary Kristi Noem has joined a Vancouver mining company, NovaRed, as a strategic advisor, your Homeland Security Secretary. Well, any idea why she would come to Vancouver, and should we be hiding our sick puppies?
No, she must have gotten the idea from Nancy Pelosi or somebody. I mean, seriously, why would you hold office unless your main goal was to get rich? So she's just moving where the money is.
Does that mean her role in the U.S. government's over if she's going to work for a Vancouver mining company?
Well, I don't know. That's something that some blog like The Hill would talk about. Remind me which department Noem was at, Department of...
Well, it seemed to be the Department of Dressing Up and buying $200 million worth of ads. But Homeland Security.
Homeland Security. I don't know. As long as she doesn't get in my way at the airport, I'm fine with whatever she does.
Mm-hmm. Rick, anything else we should be keeping a close eye on?
I would say instead of your eye, keep one foot on the fire escape there. I know I've been saying this for 40 years, but I just think this bull blowout is just way overdrawn here. You look at a chart of the Qs, a lot of tech stocks, the steepness of its rally has been, I can't even track it anymore. I mean, I can't, it's hard for me to come up with new targets because, the move has been so, it's in uncharted water. So I would strongly suggest putting your money in things that have been, at least until recently, reviled, like treasury paper and some company that's got a good 100-year record on dividends. But I'm not going to say it because it just echoes something I've said 1,000 times before about how I just feel like the market is toppy, but it does feel like that.
Oh, and before we go, will the new Fed chair up interest rates or keep them steady?
Oh, I don't know. I never get much involved with what I know. Don't fight the Fed. Yesterday I was trading and things went berserk all of a sudden. I was looking at a lot of the lunatic stocks and I was bearish yesterday, on a half bullish opening bar for everything. I was bearish because a lot of my lunatic stocks had downside targets that remained to be fulfilled. So at the end of the day, I had these stink bids in all these stocks and they got hit. They not only got hit, but they got exceeded. So I bailed out of all of them, sort of scratched a lot of trades. I held on to Nvidia overnight, which worked out for me. But for anybody who trades, you definitely have to pay attention to the Fed calendar, because whenever some Fed poobah is blathering, the market has a way of responding. It is responding in a way, I call it the next idiot effect. And the next idiot effect is simply the market does what you would think it's supposed to do when certain news hits the tape. And although you'll look at the news, it'll be something like, well, Fed leaves rates unchanged. And in the meantime, the market is acting like some sort of rabid badger that's swallowed, you know, that's just had a hit of methadrine or something. And to this supposed news that the Fed, you know, is not going to do anything. And the reason the market goes nuts is that if you're on Wacker Drive or on Wall Street, if you're in 324 Wacker Drive and the news hits, you're looking at it not from the standpoint of what the news means or what you should do, but how the idiot at 321 Wacker Drive on the trade desk there is going to interpret the news. So you're forced to do what the next idiot's, you suspect the next idiot's going to do. So that really does move the markets, especially on news, when the news seems to be kind of blah, kind of nothing. And we get these huge moves, like if the Fed loosens at all, it might not have any consequences for the real world and the real economy, but you have to think, well, the idiot at 324 Wacker, he's going to buy this news about the interest rates easing, and so I've got to buy it too. So it creates this mass hysteria that goes all in one direction, and it goes too far, and then 6 minutes later, it swings the other way, goes to the other extreme, until things just kind of find the craziness just kind of it exhausts itself, and things stabilize exactly where they were before the news. So not only don't fight the Fed, but just pay attention to the Fed calendar if you're trading.
Rick, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Always a pleasure, Jim. I appreciate the invitation to reach your vast audience.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks. His website, rickackerman.com. If you have any questions for Rick or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.